This week on the show, boogie, 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 we can't see at all why the Kings made this trade. Adam Kaufman of WBZ Radio in Boston helps us break it down. I'll give you my thoughts on the whole Cousins saga, and we get a little presidential this President's Day week. You don't want to miss it. Calling it starts right now. Welcome into another edition of Calling It. I am your host, Alex Barth. Thank you for joining us this week. We got a lot of good stuff to get to. And we'll start with Adam Kaufman of WBZ Radio Boston in 98.5, the Sports Hub. Adam, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Well, not as well as I was last night when there was still a chance DeMarcus Cousins could be a Celtic. I'll tell you that. And I think a lot of Celtics Nation upset about that. The trade itself shocking the NBA, but we'll take a look at that first before we get into the Celtics aspect of it. Is this the most one-sided trade we've seen since the infamous Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett to the Nets trade?
Boy, it seems like it might be when you really break down all the factors. I mean, for starters, it's hard to not laugh at it, right?
Right.
So I'm going to attempt to break down all the different facets of why this is such a miserable trade for the Sacramento Kings. All right, so DeMarcus Cousins, who's 26 years old, who is an all-caliber, all-pro, all-NBA player, who is as dominant a player at both ends of the court and is a big, which is so hard to find. And even that, a new form, new era stretch five, he can actually shoot the three. He's worked that into his repertoire over the last couple of years. We can do everything. He's averaging 28-11 this year. Problem, as we all know, or at least people who follow the NBA, he's a complete and total head case. He's temperamental, and many people, organizations wonder if you can actually build around this guy. Is he worth giving a $200+ million a year contract extension? So the Kings wrestled with that, obviously, and ultimately decided, after saying multiple times, even earlier in the day, that they weren't going to deal him, that his future was in Sacramento and all his blah, blah, blah. I love Sacramento. That's where I want to be. And I want my number in the rafters and yada, yada, yada. Well, he's gone. So he goes to New Orleans, a team that is not so well run in its own right, which is kind of a shame because I'd just love to see the guy on a well-run organization to really see if he'd get his head on straight and not be with an organization that, you know, in the case of the Kings, has won, I think, 34% of its games in the 7 years that he has been in the NBA. But he goes and for virtually nothing, potentially anyway. I mean, the prize player in the deal going the other way is Buddy Hield, who, look, we all loved him at Oklahoma in that tournament run. He had an unbelievable senior season. But you can really debate how good a pro he's going to be, because at the moment he can shoot pretty well and he can't do much else. And he really has a hard time staying on the floor on account of that fact. So he's the big name going the other way, along with a couple of throw-ins and then the picks. What's interesting about the picks is that somehow New Orleans got Sacramento to agree to having the first round pick be, I think, top four protected. So just imagine if the Pelicans, who are now, as we talk, 2.5 games out of a playoff spot, if they should happen to sneak in to the playoffs, get into that seventh or eighth seed, and then all of a sudden what Sacramento was banking on being a lottery pick becomes the 16th or 18th or whatever pick, I mean, Sacramento is just screwed in a loaded draft, as opposed to maybe a top five pick, six pick, or whatever, unprotected, which they should have been able to garner for Cousins. It ends up that this could not even, it possibly won't even be a lottery pick. And then today you have Vlade Divac, who is starting to rival Phil Jackson as being like the worst executive in the entire NBA. Admit, this guy's going to work on his art of BS. He admits that just a couple of days ago, he had a better offer for DeMarcus Cousins and did not take it. So the whole thing is just absurd. And not to mention the fact that when you have such a talented player as Cousins, we all know what he's capable of on the court, and I rattled off some of it. When the TV guy, the TV voice of the team, the Kings equivalent of Mike Gorman for you Boston fans, Grant Napier, who's been with the organization for 30 years calling those games, celebrating on Twitter, and I spoke with Grant today about it, celebrating on Twitter about now we can win. We needed a fresh start. This guy, most of this guy's teammates didn't like him. He had to go. Hallelujah. I mean, from a home broadcaster, it's unbelievable, the whole dynamic. And what a way to kick off trade deadline week, because this thing's approaching on Thursday. We got a few more days.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody asked me today, you know, when's the big domino going to drop? And I'm saying big domino? There's a bigger domino? Where's LeBron going?
Exactly. I think that was probably the biggest trade we're going to see. I mean, Jimmy Butler could move, Paul George could move, guys like that. But even still, those aren't as big a names as DeMarcus Cousins when you really break it down.
So I guess the two questions in this one that kind of spring from it. The first one is, you mentioned the Kings said they weren't going to trade him. Divock even mentioning there was a better offer earlier in the day. Do we have any idea what changed, what happened over the course of what really was just the NBA All-Star game that caused them to move?
Well, at least according to the reports anyway, and you know, we all know that Adrian Wojnarowski of the Vertical is as good as they come. He's had on his podcast earlier that other teams who expressed even tepid interest in acquiring DeMarcus Cousins, because the market really was just not there for him, because this guy is viewed as such a clubhouse or locker room, I hate to say cancer. I don't like associating that with this, but such a poison pill that people, you know, there was interest in acquiring them, but nobody was going to give up the farm. You know, it makes us feel like dummies, those of us in Boston that have been spending a year, 2 years debating, well, would you give up a Nets pick? Would you give up two Nets picks? This is before Jaylen Brown was drafted. Would you give up all three Nets picks to get DeMarcus Cousins when then this ends up being the haul? Woj put on his podcast that Sacramento wasn't getting back to other teams. And I think other teams got frustrated, started to lose interest, had their doubts. And, you know, just the timing of it is again, this comes back to Divots and ownership. And ownership evidently had a man crush on Buddy Hield that I'll never quite understand.
Those March runs, they'll get you.
Yeah, I guess. It just, you know, the trade deadline, as noted, is Thursday. I mean, why not? I guess if the offers were only getting worse by the day, then sure, you had to make a move. But how does it not increase? How does it not improve as you get near the trade deadline? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I guess they did what they felt was best. And I think, as you said with your very first question, I think it's going to go down as a very poor trade for Sacramento, an organization that for well over a decade has not been able to get out of its own way.
So then it comes down to the Boston reaction, which is kind of, Boston kind of the supporting player in this. They were the favorite to land Cousins for what seems like a year now, maybe more than that. And the Celtics, the fan base seems to be really split. And it all comes on two questions to me that kind of divide the Celtics right now. So the first question would be, is attitude too much of a focus in the NBA? I went back and looked. I can't find a team in the last 10 years that didn't win a title without either a Hall of Famer or a total head case. And is DeMarcus Cousins a top 10 player? Is the head case worth it?
I think he's a top 10 player in the NBA right now. I do. But you can't ignore the fact that I think since the 2011-12 campaign or 10-11, something like that, going back a handful of years, I mean, the guy leads the NBA in foul outs, in ejections, in technical fouls. I mean, he is, and never mind if they kept track of number of plays that you take off during a game because you just don't feel like it. I mean, he is a guy that goes by the beat of his own drum on the court, and that has cost his team games. Now, has it cost his team championships? No, because this team has, you know, averaged, I don't even know, high 20s, low 30s wins since he arrived in Sacramento. He's never really had the supporting cast, but he's certainly shown that he's not the leader, that you can't build a team around him, which is unfortunate. You know, he is responsible for his own poor market, for his own demise, for the fact that he lost out on $30 million being traded away because of the way that things work with the new CBA. I'm not going to cry for the guy. He's got more money and will have more money than I'll ever see in my life. But it's a shame when you think about some of the what ifs, because this is a guy who you should be able to insert on a title contender like Boston, you know, give up some pieces for him. And if it's talent alone and there are no chemistry or attitude concerns, you, I think, probably give up a couple of Nets picks for him because you're playing for now. And
do you think he's believe that you could compete? Attitude concerns aren't there.
Well, I think he's probably not. I think that's a good question. I do think he's probably not, unless Sacramento just decides, look, we need to reboot. We don't have anything around this guy. We're not going to anytime soon. And let's just try and stockpile picks or something like that. But even in that case, as you know, Ed, you would get a much better offer for him than what they ultimately did. But, you know, this is a guy who is, it feels like he is going to be one of those guys that whether he's in the league another 5 years, or obviously could be in there much longer if he feels like it, 10 years, 15 years, if he stays healthy, he's never going to win. You know, unless something drastically changes, he's never going to win. And I sort of, you know, it's not quite the same. It's not quite fair, but I kind of lump him into some of the guys that I look at in the NBA now, like Carmelo Anthony to me, who as a Syracuse grad, I love. I don't think he's ever going to win in the NBA. I don't think he's just missing that thing. Dwight Howard has been on some great teams. He's never going to win. He doesn't have that thing. And I don't think Cousins does either, except for him, and I think he's more talented in his own way than either of those other two. Not the scorer that Carmelo Anthony is, obviously, but he does a lot of other things. He is, you know, he's there's just that on-off switch is too frequently on-off, and it's costing him, and it just costs his old organization.
So were the Celtics, and I guess by extension, 28 other teams in the NBA, were they right to pass at that low of a price?
It just depends on whether you think the gamble's worth the flyer, right? Because, look, if you're the Celtics, it was going to cost you a Nets pick, and it seemingly anyway, or it was going to cost you Jaylen Brown, who was just a Nets pick, and looks like one day in the NBA he could be a true star. It's a little early to tell. He's two-thirds of the way through his rookie season, but number three overall pick last year, it looks like the kid can play. You know, if Brian Windhorst said earlier today he believes he could have gone to Boston if the Celtics were interested for Jaylen Brown in a first-round pick that wasn't a Nets pick. Do you do that? Well, I mean, I do. I do, you know, because I do think the Celtics are playing for the long term, not a short window like they had in the new Big Three era, but I do think that they have a window that is, they could reach the Eastern Conference Finals right now, at least if they get healthy with Bradley and Brown coming back. They're just not good enough to beat the Cavs, or they're a LeBron injury away from beating the Cavs, but even then they're not going to beat the Warriors. But you add a player like that, obviously you have a chance. But I get why they passed, because, you know, Danny Ainge, he's been working 3.5 years to stockpile these assets, and it could all come crumbling down if you make the wrong move. It's, you know, I've said it a zillion times. I put it on Twitter today. Danny Ainge is in an incredibly enviable position given all the things that are at his disposal, all the things that he could do. That being said, I wouldn't want to be Danny Ainge because if he makes the wrong move, you know, there's potentially no recovery from that.
Again, we're talking with Adam Kaufman of WBZ Radio Boston, 98.5 The Sports Hub. And you mentioned Danny Ainge there. A lot of Celtics fans pissed at him right now after they've been told for years, acquiring assets, fireworks are coming. What does it take to vindicate Ainge at this point for not making this move?
Well, again, building for the future, building for the long term. You know, the way things are set up right now with the new CBA and what it looks like these picks, if Ainge picks correctly, could be from these Nets in the next couple of years, with potentially a number one overall pick in each of these next two drafts and leading the way, at least percentage wise, this coming summer. And we'll find out come the draft lottery in May how all that pans out. But it's a loaded draft. It's been compared frequently to the 2003 draft. If you can get a couple of kids like a Jaylen Brown that are 19, 20 years old, 18 years old, whatever it may be, develop them and keep them under contract for a good long time because they're incentivized to stay with that, the way things have been collectively bargained, you can, they're trying to be like the Warriors. They're trying to set themselves up with a few good drafts in a row and have that 10-year window where they're the team. They're the dominant team in the Eastern Conference, an elongated version of that few years where it was them and the Heat, or them and the Cavs before that, when Pierce was here and Garnett and Allen arrived. You know, they want sustained excellence. And right now they're not there, but they have the chips. They have the assets to get there. Problem is, or at least not a problem necessarily, but one of the issues that sort of confounds the situation is that Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, I mean, these guys are all going to be free agents in a year and a half. You know, so Danny Ainge is going to have decisions to make there. And how much do you pay guys? Do you use the bird rights? Do you keep guys, do you pay him $30 million a year in some cases, like what Thomas may very well command if you don't restructure this summer. Can you get another free agent like an Al Horford? Everyone always talks about Gordon Hayward. Can you bring him in from Utah and try and take advantage of that relationship with Brad Stevens? Is he even the answer anyway? I mean, who knows? These are the questions that Ainge and his staff and ownership have to deal with on a daily basis. But it's, I don't think Ainge, I get the frustration from people and I share in it to a certain degree, because top 10 players very rarely, for a reason, become available in the NBA. That being said, there are a lot of arguments you can make in favor of Ainge staying the course, and we don't know. We'll find out in the next few days if, in fact, he does stay the course. But for right now, with regard to DeMarcus Cousins, he has, and it's not a bad decision. You know, the other way, though, may not have been a bad decision either. You know, one isn't necessarily better than the other. It's just, it's going to take a while to find out. And if Cousins had come to Boston, it would take a while to find out whether that was the right move or not. We just, it's one of those things where it's all well and good for sports talk fodder and putting a lot of words on a computer screen, but ultimately the games need to be played, and that's going to answer the questions.
And there's a lot of questions to be answered in the coming weeks. Adam Kaufman, you can catch him Saturday mornings. He hosts Celtics at 7 and 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's escaping me. What time is Celtics at 7 on? I just it's getting by me. Anyways, on 98.5 The Sports Hub and during the week on WBZ Radio. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time and help us sort this whole mess out.
Pleasure, man. Anytime.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Back on Colin, I am Alex Barth. Like you just heard us discussing, the big news to start the week this week after the NBA All-Star Game, just days before the trade deadline, DeMarcus Cousins dealt from the Sacramento Kings to the New Orleans Pelicans for a package highlighted by Buddy Hield, Tyreke Evans, a couple of heavily protected picks, what's pretty much being universally panned as a disappointing return for a guy who I believe and many believe is a top 10 player in the league. And you start with it right there. How does this happen in a league that's so unbalanced and has such little parity? You remember a couple of years ago, the league stopped the Pelicans actually from trading away their superstar Chris Paul to the Lakers, and how they get away with this. The team comes out, they say they got a better offer earlier in the day. Just bizarre stuff. And here you have a guy who's one of the most fun players to watch in the league, plays with a lot of passion. I know some people want to call it something else, but it's passion. He cares. And he's going to another garbage organization. Another team that's really struggled. They've made one right decision in the last 10 years. Well, now two. They drafted Anthony Davis. And now they've done this. And they'll probably have some success, but it's just frustrating. And then to see the people who deserve to be the most frustrated, believe it or not, are not the Kings fans. And I say that simply because I don't believe, outside of Dustin Pedroia, that Sacramento Kings fans exist. If you are one, you can tweet at me. But I am confident I will get no tweets on that. The Celtics fans deserve to be upset, because they've heard for years and years, since their franchise star, Paul Pierce, was dealt away for a basket of picks, which meanwhile was a great trade for the Celtics, the most lopsided trade we've seen besides this one in a long time, and all they heard was, we're acquiring assets, and there's going to be fireworks, and we're going to bring in superstars. And so here it comes. You have a top 10 player on the market, and it's not every day the top 10 players are available. It just doesn't happen in any sport, forget the NBA, when superstars are everything. And in free agency, maybe, but for a trade, no. And then to find out the price was so low and the Celtics didn't want in on it, there's just so many questions to have if you're a Boston Celtics fan at this point. So many questions, and to me it starts not with the general manager, but with the head coach. Because it came out today that Brad Stevens said he didn't want to coach DeMarcus Cousins. He didn't want to deal with him. Now, he obviously doesn't have the final say. Ainge does. But you have to assume he's going to consult with his head coach, who many consider the Celtics' biggest asset. And if Stevens supposedly is this great coach, I've seen him ranked as high as second in the NBA behind Popovich, of course. If he is this great coach, Why he doesn't want to change his system for the superstar? He can't handle a superstar. If you're that good, you'll handle a top 10 player. Mike Woodson was the coach of the Lakers. He was the coach of the Knicks. He won 50-plus games with the Knicks dealing with Carmelo Anthony. DeMarcus Cousins is a much better player than Carmelo Anthony. So does Brad Stevens think he's not as good of a coach as Mike Woodson, who is a bottom feeder benchminder? That just blows my mind. It almost seems, and not to aggravate Boston fans even more, very Claude Julien-esque. I can't help but draw similarities to the Tyler Seguin trade from a couple years ago. Claude Julien, and this is beyond anything I've ever seen, is so married to his system, not just in roster building, but game to game. He'll be down in the third period and still have his third line go out there and dump and chase. Claude Julien is so married to his system. He deals this elite score away for nothing because he didn't want to change his system. When you get a player like that, you make it work. And in the NBA, where it's easier than any other sport to change your identity, and the identity means less, and coaching, frankly, means less in the NBA than any of the four major sports, you make the exception. And then to see the price and to know that you could have had him for next to nothing. And some Celtic, the defenders of Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge are coming out today and saying that we only get one chance with these picks. You only get one chance to get it right. So if Cousins, because he has his attitude problems, which he does have, but I think Stevens could have handled it. I think he would have been better in a winning atmosphere and a fan base that cares. If he goes off the rails, you've ruined it and Paul Pierce left for nothing. And obviously, I mean, it's so tied into that with Celtics fans. And Cousins would have been a good answer. What if he goes off the rails? Well, considering you only had to give up a mid-level prospect in one first-round pick, you still have one of those Brooklyn picks, which are ever so valuable. You still have, I mean, their two top prospects right now are Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. You keep one of those. You still have Thomas. You still have Horford. You still have Bradley. You get another shot at it. You still have the assets to make the deal. It was very low risk. And there are risks here inherently. There are two roads. You risk with Cousins, or three roads. You take the risk with Cousins. You take the risk not taking Cousins and assume Paul George becomes available, because he's the only player out there comparable who's supposedly on the market, unless there's somebody else who teams are secretly shopping and we don't know. Or you take the risk with the draft, and you hope you get the top lottery pick, which the Celtics never have. You get Lonzo Ball, and he hits his ceiling. And that's, I mean, you're iffing it enough right there with the lottery. And to me, Cousins was the best risk to take considering how low the price was in that. And it's just a little upsetting that maybe the reason they didn't do it is either because they're too trigger shy and they don't want to do the wrong thing with all these assets when the risk has to happen, or the supposed great coach doesn't want to handle. I had people tell me today that they'd rather have Brad Stevens on the Celtics than DeMarcus Cousins. I don't agree with that. How many points a game does Brad Stevens average? You bring in any old coach, I'll go back to Mike Woodson, won 50 games, over 50 games, with some very so-so Knicks teams, at a time the Eastern Conference was much stronger than it is right now. I think you had to go get Cousins. And to all the Celtics defenders who are saying Jaylen Brown will hit his ceiling, I heard Demetrius Jackson will hit DeMarcus Cousins' ceiling. DeMarcus Cousins is a top 10 player in the NBA. And for the Celtics, I'll say this. There are only three ways they can be vindicated. You win a title before the Pelicans do, which seems very difficult right now. You acquire Paul George or somehow get another top 10 talent. And if you get Paul George, like, okay, it's not often you get to pick between top 10 talents, but that would vindicate the Celtics a little bit. Or the Kings come out and flat out say that they weren't going to deal him to the Celtics no matter what. And Vlade Divac more or less did the opposite of that today, saying that there were better offers on the table. Anyway. That's my abbreviated DeMarcus Cousins rant. For more, you can follow me on Twitter, @TheRealAlexB. Let me hear it, please. Kings fan, I know you're angry. Him or her, come at me, please. And we wait and see what happens with the trade deadline looming. I'm Alex Barth, calling it. We'll be right back.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call. The game within the game.
Welcome back to Calling It. I am Alex Barth, and it's time for our new segment, Call It Like It Is. This week, joining us from Snap Call Sports is Andy Collier. Andy, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So I'm going to fire a couple of the big headlines going on this week at you. You just give me the first thing that comes to your mind. You call it like it is, and then we'll have a prediction for you to make as well. Sound good?
You got it. Sound like, bring it on.
All right, so the first one, the big one, DeMarcus Cousins traded yesterday for pretty much nothing. Andy, call it like it is.
I really like the trade for the Pelicans, no doubt about it. I really like it. I think that it immediately makes the Pelicans a dangerous team. It's such a guard-heavy league that you kind of now throw a big man mix into it, and they're dangerous, man. I would not want to play them in the playoffs. I would be really scared in the West if you ever end up having to face off with them.
Okay, prediction time. Will the Pelicans hold an opponent to zero rebounds in a game at any point this year?
You would think, like, how on earth could a team get rebounds with them on the floor? But I bet you they could hold a team to under 15 to 20 for three quarters. And you're talking about two guys. They're the only two guys in the NBA that have averaged 20 and 10 over the last 4 years. So we're talking monsters down low that you just can't stop. How can you stop one? Now you got to stop two? Good luck.
March 31st, the Kings play the Pelicans, and Willie Cauley-Stein will have his work cut out for him. Keeping it in the NBA, the All-Star game was Sunday night. No defense, really just a three-point contest mixed with a dunk contest. Andy, call it like it is.
You know, it's an exhibition. So, I mean, I guess in that sense, you want to see the superstars kind of do their thing. And I like it. You know, it's kind of fun. We're kind of getting into a golden era of basketball again. I think, like, we have a legitimate crop of all-time great players. Listen, you don't want anybody getting hurt trying to play defense or whatever, playing too hard. But, you know, in the same sense, I like the storylines that they had where Westbrook and Durant were buddies and they kind of celebrated with them after they, you know, kind of did their thing in the first quarter. That's cool. It's fun. Who doesn't like to see scoring? I mean, why not? You know, it's the best.
Prediction time. We've seen back-to-back years now. Teams put up scores in the 190s. Will we see 200 as a total team score in the All-Star game next year?
Yeah, why not? I mean, the scoring is only going to get better from here, I feel, you know, and I think maybe if a team can really kind of put a little bit extra effort in there, why not?
So this one kind of snuck under the radar today, but if you live on Twitter like I do, you saw it. Our first big baseball storyline of the year comes from Jose Canseco, of all people, who went on a Twitter rant today about machines and technology coming to take over and destroy the human race. This guy is completely out of his mind, Andy. Other than that, call it like it is.
Yeah, I think he's trying to watch that AMC series, Humans or something, thinking like they're going to take over the world. I don't even know. I mean, I think it's funny. Like, Canseco shouldn't really be one to talk about some kind of mechanical enhancement when he's obviously been documented of his own personal enhancements and calling out other players, stuff like that. He's certainly a character. I mean, he's certainly entertaining.
Is it a little hypocritical for a guy to be worried about machines when his body was manufactured in a laboratory?
Absolutely. I mean, that's so funny. Like, why? What is he? Like, how? What are you coming up with? What basis do you have with these robots and all that stuff? Listen, he might be right. Who the heck knows? It's just kind of like an eye rolling moment and kind of whatever, dude. But you be you and just kind of keep posting that stuff because it's going to give us something to talk about.
So given it is President's Day week, and little did I know when I was planning the show, Andy has a degree in American history. Again, we're talking with Andy Collier of Snap Call.
Yes, sir.
We figured we'd have a little fun with it. So, Andy, I'm going to give you a president, and you give me their counterpart in the sporting world. It can be an athlete, a media member, a fan, whatever. So, for example, if I gave you George Washington, I would say my response to that would be Jim Thorpe. You know, you think of the first all-time great athlete, the first president. So you have George Washington, Jim Thorpe. So let's get started with James Madison. Okay. Give me James Madison's sporting companion.
I would say Bill Belichick.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because James Madison is known as the father of the Constitution. The dude, he created arguably the most important document in human history. You know, the foundation of democracy that most other countries try to emulate is off of our Constitution. And I'm going to say Belichick only because, you know, kind of the recency of it. But the dude's a mastermind, and he has created the dynasty that is the Patriots, that over the course of the time that he's been there, he has pretty much built something that is so almost perfect that it's that there's so many teams that want to emulate that he has created this era of greatness that everybody's jealous of. You know, if you're a hater of the Patriots, it's because you're jealous of the Patriots. And I think that's exactly why a lot of people are jealous of America's, because we got all the freedom.
So I guess that would make Tom Brady the Constitution itself and Roger Goodell King
George.
Yeah,
I guess so. He's like, he's like the Bill of Rights.
Next up, William Henry Harrison, the shortest tenured president.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I got a couple ideas for that one. I'm kind of thinking one thing I think like it comes to mind is like Lin Sanity. When Jeremy Lin was doing his thing in New York, I was like, hey, that's kind of, you know, kind of like a flash in the pan comes in. It was, hey, man, it was a fantastic run. And then it fizzled out like you wouldn't believe. He got paid, though, so I guess it's all good. But another name that really kind of sticks out to me is Ryan Leaf. Think about it in the sense that, like, you know, Ryan Leaf is, you know, he was so highly touted coming out of college. And it was really Ryan Leaf versus Peyton Manning, kind of the idea of who should be one versus two. And, you know, Harrison, when he came in as president, it was kind of like a culture shift. America was kind of heading in a different direction. And I think that people were kind of looking to join like a movement of sorts. And they chose wrong because the guy, in his own arrogance, trying to be his a smart aleck in a way, he decided not to wear an overcoat to his really, really, really cold inauguration and ended up contracting pneumonia and dying. So that's ended up being a very poor decision on his part. And I guess you could actually probably liken that to Leaf's quite a big chunk of change in Vegas after the draft, and instead of going to work like Manning would. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty fair comparison.
But for those of you who haven't seen it, and I think that's a great comparison, Ryan Leaf has done a fantastic job turning his life around. There's a great piece on FoxSports.com.
Yes.
Check it out.
That being said, now he's, yes, I will give you that.
John F. Kennedy.
Ooh, JFK. I would say Luke Gehrig. Lou Gehrig, because they're both very well revered by the public. I think that, you know, Gehrig was one of the gentle souls of American sports. He's an amazing character. But they were also both American tragedy stories where, you know, the American media was able to find, you know, kind of cover the assassination of JFK, and baseball at its height, we lose Lou Gehrig to ALS. They were both great at what they did, very well revered, and their lives were unfortunately cut too short.
See, I'd raise you Ted Williams because they both lost some of their best years to the war, and there's nothing Bostonians love more than JFK or Ted Williams. Gotta love those Kennedys.
Yeah, that's actually a good one.
Andrew Stonewall Jackson.
Jackson, oh, he was my favorite president. This dude was, you want to talk about a cult of personality. This guy called it like it was. I think, for me, he reminds me kind of like a Dennis Rodman of sorts. I also love Dennis Rodman, too. I grew up a Spurs fan. Long story on that one, but he was just a riot. He's a colorful character, and he didn't care about what people thought about him. But he also kind of had a run-in with the establishment a little bit, kind of. Didn't really like the NBA, you know, just like how Jackson didn't really get along with his constituents. So you know, I think that's a good one for sure.
So I just realized Andrew Jackson's not Stonewall, is he? That's a different Jackson.
No, that's the general. Andrew Jackson though was a war general in War of 1812 though, and he was a the Battle of New Orleans, if we want to kind of bring it full circle back to the All-Star game.
I apologize to any of my history teachers who are listening. I promise I was paying attention in class. One last one for you. My favorite president when I was born, sorry if that makes anybody out there feel old, William Clinton, Slick Bill Clinton.
Slick Willie. I would say Wilt Chamberlain. I think that Bill Clinton is the Wilt Chamberlain of American politics. And it has very little to do with politics.
Yeah, I think that's all you need to say about that.
Yeah.
Andy Collier of Snap Call Sports, thank you very much for taking the time and not only entertaining us, but giving us a little bit of a history lesson as well this President's Day week.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thanks, Andy. Have a good one.
You too, man.
That's going to be just about all the time we have for this episode of Callin' It. I'd like to thank Adam Kaufman of WBZ Radio 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, for joining. Andy Collier of Snap Call Sports. Those guys were great. We'll have a trade deadline preview show, both NBA and NHL, coming up later in the week, depending on when you're listening to this. And then next week, hopefully, we'll finally get into some baseball. DeMarcus Cousins kind of pushed that back a little for us this weekend. Maybe even some golf. Maybe. No promises, but it was nice out this week. Those clubs are calling me from the basement. We'll get it in soon for sure. Again, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Callin' It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.